Here at the All In Podcast, we love talking about sports. That's pretty much our main topic. And sure. In sports, you need to be reliable. Well, what's more reliable than Tavon's Lawn Care, LLC? It's a Black-owned family business in York, PA. Tavon's Lawn Care, or TLC for short, since they provide each job with tender love and care, has been in business for over 10 years. Founded by owner Tavon Parker, TLC aims to provide employment for underprivileged youth while providing great service at a reasonable rate. You can visit Tavon's Lawn Care LLC.com or Tavon's Lawn Care on Facebook and Instagram to view their portfolio and request your cost-free quote now. So if you need any kind of lawn care or landscaping job, visit Tavon's Lawn Care for your landscaping needs.
Hey guys, welcome back to the All In Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Badzik, joined as always by my co-host, Eli Cooper. What's up, man?
Not much, man. Big day in the Premier League. Had some exciting top four finishes. The relegation battle was pretty exciting. So,
yep.
Pretty good day.
Yeah, it was a great day. If you were following at all, Man United made top four. So, I'm very happy today. Also, my Pittsburgh Pirates got their first win of the year. So, this is turning out to be a great day for Mike. Joining us through Zoom today is our guy, Sean. What's up, man?
What's up, dude? How you guys doing?
Doing good. Thank you for joining us. We wanted to, you know, this was the last day of the Premier League season. So we wanted to get together with Sean and just talk about, like, all the fixtures and the results and what they mean and what it means going for next year. So we're excited to talk about some of those topics with Sean. Make sure you're following us. All_in_pod on Twitter and All In Network. Make sure you're subscribing to this network so you can see all of our videos as well as videos from Real Deal Radio, All In with Rain and Bliss, and All In Politics. So let's get into some Premier League talk then. That's what we have Sean here for. The first thing we want to talk about is Manchester United, my favorite team. And they today, with the win against Leicester City, clinched a top four position. They finished third this year. And they clinched a Champions League spot for next year. It's been really a bumpy road for United this year. They were as low as 14th in the table in October. I think they were in 8th when they brought in Bruno in January, Bruno Fernandes. He's been a huge bump for them. And it's really been a huge success story, the comeback this year. Sean, what's your thoughts on United year as a whole and I guess their win today is against Leicester City as well?
Okay. So, I mean – the overall season, I would say I would be pretty happy with how it turned out. I'd be ecstatic about Bruno. Brought him in, Completely changed that team. You really couldn't ask more from him, I would say. He did exactly what he was paid the big bucks for. So They used that money wisely. They brought in Harry. And, of course, he wasn't fantastic, but he definitely came in and filled a gap where they needed a little bit of help. Bailly being out for a little bit kind of forced them to change that back line up a little bit. Luke Shaw looked like he's really getting comfortable at that left back spot. And they look like they got some young guys that they can kind of interchange in there too. So I think overall, I think United got pretty the best of this season coming from how far down on the table that they were. And to finish top four, I mean, it's United. So I would say it's a big club. I'm happy to see them guys in. It's really nice. Obviously, you get Pogba back. Looks a little lackadaisical, but can obviously make big stuff happen. But overall, I like where they finish. I say top four, and get to play some Champions ball, which is huge for what's coming up in this transfer window.
Absolutely.
I'm just curious.
What do you think, Coop?
Yeah, I mean, I said this to Mike earlier that I kind of adopted United as my favorite Premier League team.
From
watching them, towards the end of the year here, the Bruno Fernandes signing absolutely changed his team. It's ridiculous. They didn't lose a single game with him. 9 wins, 5 draws in the 14 games, and he had 8 goals and 7 assists. So pretty much contributing to a goal per game. In his stint. And honestly, when you look at solely on impact on a team, you really could have made an argument a very small argument for him for player of the year, even though he only played 14 games. So obviously,
no spoilers.
Yeah, which we'll get to. That topic we'll get to. But it's just like, in a 14 game season, he was arguably more impactful than any one player in the Premier League the entire year. Like, even when you look at Liverpool and the incredible season they had, like, it was a complete group effort, you know, so much that, you know, Jordan Henderson ended up getting the player of the year, and you can't find him on any statistical category as a leader. You know what I mean? So that's just kind of how good Liverpool was. United's season turned around completely with the signing of Bruno Fernandes. In January, Leicester was up 14 points and had a plus 20 goal difference to United. And they ended up 4 points back with a minus 4 goal difference to United. That is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, earlier in the year, United was, if Marcus Rashford doesn't score, nobody scores. Right. And that was the biggest problem defensively. You know, Harry Maguire made huge impact on that on the defense. They really weren't that bad. They weren't, you know, elite, but they really weren't that bad. It's when, you know, they couldn't score was their problem early on. And then Bruno Fernandes came back. Martial got healthy. And, you know, they had two guys finish, you know, with 17 goals. Between, you know, those two, and then you add in, you know, Mason Greenwood's contributions, Bruno's, and Pogba's later on. And United looked like, you know, the scariest team in the Prem in that last, I would say, in the last, like, 5 to 8 game stretch, however many games they played after the restart. And I think, you know, the thing is, they didn't have to sit back and rely on hitting you on the counter anymore, and that was really the difference, right? You know, once they got Bruno back, it gave them some control in the midfield. And then you added Pogba into that mix during the restart. And it really gave them two midfielders who could break a defense down when teams sit behind the ball. And that's what they were struggling to do, you know, earlier in the season. So it was a clear difference. And now, you know, they finished third in the table. They secure their Champions League spot. And the biggest thing about that is not just that they're getting back into the Champions League. They now become much more attractive to potential signings. And it's something that we've talked about in pretty much every soccer episode we've done is, you know, it's going to be a lot harder for Sancho to turn down a United move knowing he's still going to be playing Champions League football. Kingsley Coman has entered the mix for United as potential, you know, if they don't get Sancho, you know, he could be a potential signing. I think he'd be a great fit with United, you know, playing on the right side and would still give them an incredible amount of pace on the wing. So, you know, now you're looking at, you know, maybe the only other hole you really have to fix is that second center back spot and maybe left back. Although I really like Brandon Williams even a little bit more than Luke Shaw. So, you know, I don't think those are glaring needs. Like, I think they're still top four, even if they don't necessarily address those, you know, with the signing of Sancho or Kingsley Coman. But, you know, the future looks really bright in United. Rashford, I think, took a big step forward this year as a player. He looked a ton more confident. I think they figured out that the left wing is his natural position. And I think they also figured out that Martial is just better at the nine spot. And those two are interchangeable as well. So like throughout the game, you'll see one drift out to the wing and the other one drift in behind. Same with Mason Greenwood. He'll start on the right. He'll mix it up. You know what I mean? Those three are really interchangeable, which can confuse defenses. But now they have that ability to hit you on the counter with the pace they have. They have guys who can run in behind and Pogba and Bruno can pick out those long passes all day long, but they can also beat you in build up play. You know, as well. And especially when you add in like a guy off the bench, like Ighalo, who can come in and hold the ball up, give you a big physical striker. You have to feel good as a United fan right now.
Well, let me speak as a United fan because I do feel, really good. And, you know, like whatever, when you talk about like being a fan. So like, if you don't know me that well, my teams are like United, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Pittsburgh Pirate and Pittsburgh Kids, the Pittsburgh Pirate. And the Toronto Raptors. We don't have an NBA team, so I adopted Toronto. And there's few times where I've been, like, proud of the team. I've been proud. Even when the Steelers won the Super Bowls, it wasn't like I was like, well, like we got this really young team and this wasn't really supposed to happen. We had to make this huge comeback. Maybe when they won as a sixth seed, but that was a little bit different. You know, Toronto, when they won their championship, like that was like a proud moment because all the shit that we had been through every year getting killed in the playoffs. The Pirates, when they finally made the playoffs in 2013. You know, but this was like a proud moment because of how far we had to climb back. You know, I mentioned 14th in the table in October. I don't think anybody at that stage would have said United's going to be in the Champions League next year. Even when they got Bruno Fernandes and they were in eighth in January, that was even a stretch to say that they were going to turn it around so much so that they were going to finish third in the table, much less make the Europa League or make the Champions League. To finish third in the table, it's just huge. So, you know, this was just like a great day for United fans to see, you know, great game by Mason Greenwood, who created the pressure, who got it to Bruno, who sent it up to Martial and created the penalty. Just like really good football and really good attacking football. We were texting back and forth in our group message, and I texted and I said, I can't decide if – it looks like they can't decide if they want to go for it or if they want to sit back and play for the draw. But really, I think they went for it. I think they ended up just going for it when they came out of halftime, and I think it worked out. And they put the pressure on, and they weren't afraid to press. I think a lot of times when teams are kind of sitting back playing for that draw, they might just sit back. They might not press. They went full steam ahead, and they were able to come up with that one mistake from Leicester City in their own half, and it turned into a penalty. And Bruno, as he's done every time, he stepped up for a penalty this year since he scammed a United, converted it pretty much with ease. So it's just he's been fantastic for us. You know, when you talk about player of the year, I think he does have a case. I think he does. I mean, I probably wouldn't pick him just because it was a smaller sample size, you know, playing less than half a year in one league. That's kind of almost like the Zion Rookie of the Year debate in the NBA. You know, he didn't play enough to maybe win the award, but you know, his impact, even in a half of a season, what you could argue was just as much as anybody in a full season for their team. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer deserves a ton of credit for the way that he was able to run, because they, you know, it wasn't like they were in 14th and they were just playing terrible. They had a ton of injuries, you know, and we didn't know where the goals were coming from either. To turn it around, as is, it's been really impressive, and certainly was nervous today. There was a couple times where LC was pushing up on us, and I was thinking, oh man, that might be the one. You know, nowadays you get a little nervous with De Gea back there and his hands, how strong they're going to be. So it was definitely nerve wracking. I think whenever we were able to break through and Bruno was able to score, that was probably the moment where he took a breath and said, okay, now they need two to beat us. And then how about Lingard at the end coming in?
Lingard coming in the game, baby.
Putting pressure on the keeper and scoring. That was cool to watch. I'm really excited about this United team going forward. I really am.
Now, hold on. Tell the viewers what you said about Lingard when he came on.
Let me just say, I'll pull up the text. How about I just pull
up? You was not liking that sub. Hey, say hey, man.
Okay, Lingard.
He just looks. You can't blame him. Like sometimes when he plays, he just looks lost at times. So it's just like, hey, that's why it was nice for him to get a goal and, you know, boost his confidence and really seal the deal. That was cool. But for Bruno, not only the reason why that signing is really good is not only did he come in and provide that. That 10 role in controlling the ball, it now made them able to be more aggressive in their buildup instead of what they were doing earlier in the year, was just kind of catching people out off of errors and big counterattacks. And then you have your 9 spot who you're interchanging Martial and Rashford in to see who's going to develop into that lethal front runner in front of goal. And I mean, Martial did a pretty good job of it this year. I would say if he can get 2 feet. Like Mason Boyd, I would say that's an attack that's pretty good attack. It's just Bruno. Not only does he give you that impact, which is why when we transitioned to the Jordan Henderson conversation, I got some stats for you. And if you just read his stat line, you're not gonna think like, oh, this guy's gonna win Player of the Year. It's just what he brings to the game, how he plays the game. So Bruno not only brought that, he also followed it up with impactful goals, impactful key passes and obviously they put him on pins, which I think they were shaky on at first too, because they were switching out Rashford on. They put Pogba on.
Pogba, yeah.
So he just came in and completely filled that role, and you saw it. It was a complete 180 that they did with this team. So that was a fantastic signing. And getting into the top four attracts a guy like Sancho. So I mean, I'm curious to see what happens in this window that we have slightly adjusted since this pandemic. So
yeah, and not only is Bruno such a steady hand, you know, on the field during the games, but also he does bring a certain level of professionalism and a certain level of competition to practice even. To make those guys better. And I think that is sometimes overlooked. So he has been just unbelievable. And there's other guys too who deserve a lot of credit. You know, Maguire, a lot of criticism about him when he first came over. I think he's been well worth the signing when you look at what he's been able to do for that defense. Juan Bissaka turned out to be one of the best defenders really in the world, especially in the, you know, Premier League, certainly one of the best right fullbacks there was. And Brennan Williams and Nemanja Matic too, who he gets a lot of slack for being slow. He had one error today that really could have cost us, but it didn't. He has actually in the last couple of games played really well. Almost, you know, he almost kind of drops back and plays more as a center back than a midfielder. But you know, it's been impressive. There's been a lot of guys who have been really impressive, and I'm feeling good about United going forward here.
Right, and kind of to address what Eli said, that back line. There's guys that they have in there like Brandy Williams, who I thought played well today, along with Juan Bissaka. Mm-hmm. Honestly, two of the standout guys of today's game. So, I mean, De Gea looked pretty good today. His form is a little bit off, but got it done today and kept a clean sheet, so that's good too. But
yeah.
Juan Bissaka, he's up there with some of those backs. I will say, I'll give you that.
Defensively, he's special.
Yeah.
Got to work on the footwork going forward and mm-hmm. get those crosses a little accurate. But defensively, he's a force.
Yeah,
sure. Absolutely.
So let's talk about the team that United beat today, Leicester City. They kind of had the opposite of United. And you know, you could call it a bit of a collapse, really, from where they were most of the year. They were sitting in second place. They fell to third place. In January, but they held that third place spot up until really the restart, and then it went, you know, not great. And ultimately, they're going to finish in fifth here. So let me ask this then, and maybe we'll start with Coop for this one. When you look at Leicester City and their season and where they were, what went wrong, I guess?
Well, in my opinion, it was defensively. I think the back line kind of fell apart. And they conceded too much. And then they got really heavily reliant on Jamie Vardy goal-wise. Like it was pretty strange to see, honestly, because they had multiple guys that were contributing. Like James Maddison looked incredible early on in the season and then just kind of tapered off towards the end.
Yeah, he had the hip injury. He missed a lot of time at the end here. That hurt them badly.
Yeah, and I think that was really bad for them. But I think the biggest thing, like I said, was the back line. I mean, if you look at just their last five games, they gave up 4 to Bournemouth, 3 to Tottenham, and then 2 today to United. You know, and then, you know, they only gave up 1 to Arsenal and kept 1 clean sheet in the 1 win that they had in the last 5 games. And that really sunk them. Like, honestly, even if United, they lost to United today, but even if, you know, United was going to get in the top 4, they could have at least caught Chelsea, or they could have at least, you know, avoided or beat out Chelsea, because Chelsea dropped 2 of their last 5 games. You know what I mean? But they just – that defense was so awful. And I think the Bournemouth loss is what did them in. Like 4-1 Bournemouth, who end up getting relegated. That's not a good loss at all in your last 5 games. So I think, you know – and honestly, I think it's actually better for them to end up in Europa League if that – you know, I think that's more their level of play. I don't know that they quite have the squad depth to really compete in Champions League anyway.
Yeah.
You know, we've always kind of seen, like, even after they won the Premier League, they didn't really do much in the Champions League following that. So, and it's because they're not a big enough club to have that kind of squad depth to be able to rotate and things like that to compete in the Premier League and in the Champions League at the same time. So I think Europa League is going to end up being more their speed anyway, but it's just unfortunate because, like you said, They held the third spot all the way through January. Mm-hmm. They had that second spot from November to January, and then held the third spot all the way up until this last five game collapse that they had. So they've got to be, you know, kicking themselves knowing that they kind of, you know, folded and keeping that Champions League spot.
What do you think about them, Sean?
Kind of just that. I already say they look good, and it was mostly because throughout the season they were able to keep people off the board. 13 clean sheets from them on the year, and then in those last four or five games, they're giving up goals. And then you also have, and I might pronounce this wrong, Sasusi Son Yusi, who was frustrated in that game and got tossed on a red, which obviously paid an impact on their defense the following game because he's going to be suspended. So really where they were dominant at is their defense, and they completely lost that going down the stretch. So that's kind of why I think they fell out. And then the attacking options that they have, you have Perez coming off the bench, who is good, but you may need to be complimented a little bit sooner instead of being so heavily dependent on Vardy to score those goals. So I think the defense is what fell apart, which is what I think led to them falling out of that top four. But, I mean, if they can keep that defense together, the defense looks good. It looks like they do have something they can, you know, kind of work with, especially in the Europa. But I just think not enough score options, and their defense is really what was their downfall to them dropping out of that top four.
Yeah, and at the beginning of the year, and really for a lot of the year, as a United fan, I was almost worried because it was like, okay, we signed Harry Maguire for all this money from these guys, and they got better, and they got better defensively. Like, what is going on here? And they did have a really hot run. Like, they, you know, you mentioned all the shutouts they had in the clean sheets, and Schürrle had a lot to do with that too. But you know, I was kind of like, wow, how much of an impact does Maguire really have if he leaves and they get better? And you know, I think, you know, law of averages, they eventually go back to probably what makes a little bit more sense where they finished defensively than where they started. And you know, it's tough when you're in the Premier League, and this is a marathon. You know, they finished the season. If they would have called it and they didn't come back here, then Leicester would have said, okay, shortened season, we'll take this 100% and be in the Champions League. It's just such a grueling season, and you have so many big clubs in this league. When you're not one of these, you know, big six clubs, it's tough. It's tough to keep a spot. It's tough to get to a spot, and it's especially tough to keep it when these big clubs start gunning for you. And yeah, they just weren't good enough. And Brendan Rodgers, I think, had a strong case for manager of the year coming in. Probably until this restart happened, he probably was maybe going to win that award. I mean, Klopp has probably a really good argument, obviously, because of how strong they've been. But Rodgers had a really good case for it when you take Leicester City and you have him in a Champions League spot. So I think that they're probably disappointed. I think their fans, you know, it's not every year that they make the Europa League, but you got to think that with how close they were to Champions, that this is going to be taken as a disappointment. So disappointing for Leicester City. You know, I don't feel great about them because I do. I mean, I like the squad. I like Brendan Rodgers. Excuse me. Jamie Vardy is, you know, one of the best strikers we've seen in the Premier League. So you feel bad for him. So, all right, let's talk about Chelsea though. They came up clutch today with the win. And they needed it really coming into the match. I think they were thinking it's win or go home. You know, they you know, it looks like now they probably could have said, okay, all we really needed was a draw, but at the time they didn't know that. So, you know, for them to go in and they got a goal from Mason Mount, which is very impressive. And Olivier Giroud got one on a big hustle play. That was just really fun to watch, honestly. So let's talk about Chelsea then and Frank Lampard's first year. Unfortunately, Dan couldn't be with us to talk about his squad. But, Sean, what were your thoughts on Chelsea this year and Frank Lampard's first season?
I got you. I got your back, Dan. Shout out to Dan. So, I would say to sum up Frank's season, I think it was above average. I already said I don't think it was superb. I think it was above average. They got back into some Champions football and attracted some signings even before that when it was a little bit cloudy of if they would be in Champions Ball. So I think that he did a pretty good job with turning this team around. You can obviously see spurts of class in that team, especially with it being filled in with a lot of young guys. And then you can see Olivier Giroud in there showing his class, his goal. He's just so strong up front. It was nice. He beat the keeper, beat the defender, and then put the ball in the back of the net. And then, like I said, some class from Mason Mount on a free kick where he just got it perfectly. And I would say Frank had a good year rotating a lot of guys. Me, I'm a little bit upset because he was pulling Christian out of the game in some games where it was necessarily like, well, you need another playmaker. And that was coming out of him. So a few games where he sat him, I just didn't quite understand or brought him off the bench, especially their game, the previous match, where he came in and immediately impacted the game with a goal and an assist. So the reason why I was down on him sitting him is because, one, he's impactful. And he's a little unrefined, and, of course, if he sharpens it up, he can really be a really top forward in the Prem, which I was a little bit shaky on at first because of his size. But, I mean, soccer, that doesn't really matter. It's about how meticulous you are in refining your skills. And I wanted to touch on the goal that he scored because when he first caught it, I'm thinking he might have turned it around and opened up on the other side, which I thought would have been a little bit immature. He didn't. He waited, stopped, turned around, sized it up, and put it where nobody could get it. And I thought that was just a showcase of how he has developed in the Premier League because it shows that he's maturing. It shows that he's getting a little smarter with his chances in front of goal. It was fantastic. So I would say I think with the signings that they have, I'm curious to how he'll implement those guys along with CP or if CP will get more time or less time because they got a lot of guys out there that can play those positions because you got Mason Mount. You now have Ziyech. And then you also have to accompany Giroud. Where is he going to play at? Tammy, where is he going to grow? And then you also bring in Timo Werner. So, I mean, I'm curious to how he'll start next year. But overall, this year, I thought he did a good job. He worked with some younger guys, and it looks like he got them fired up enough to get in that top four. So I really like it. I really like it. I think his season was above average is what I would give it. I would give it a 7.8 out of 10.
I'd give him a 9. And the reason for that is – based on Chelsea's expectations coming into the season. Remember, they had just sold away Hazard, who was literally, they were so dependent on him for creating anything for them last season under Sarri ball. So, you sell a guy like that right before you get a confirmed like two-window transfer ban, or a transfer ban window, it didn't look good for Chelsea. I don't think, most people would have thought they would have finished top four at that point when you look back at that. Then they hire, a manager with no Premier League experience as the main guy, obviously, even though he was great at Derby County, he had never managed at this level before. So there were a ton of doubts about this Chelsea team coming into the season. And, for them to finish top four to me was absolutely an accomplishment. Yeah. What you got out of Tammy Abraham this year, 15 goals in all competitions, was incredible. Mason Mount, both of those guys were playing in the championship last year. And they started off the season, really carrying this team as far as their offense goes. And then Pulisic eventually came on and had that great run where he scored like 5 goals in 5 games in the middle of the season, then kind of disappeared and then came on really strong again here late. So like a lot of their young guys really stepped up. And I think the great thing that we saw and that we talked about on our previous soccer episode was the competitiveness, right? Mm-hmm. Week in, week out, these guys had to fight and scrap and claw because you never knew, There was an odd man left out every time, whether it was William, Pedro, Giroud for a long time was out of the mix because of how well Tammy Abraham was playing. you know, and things like that. So, you know, guys really had to fight for the spots. Even Kepa, you know what I mean? After, you know, for so long, he had to, you know, compete with Caballero at the in the goalkeeper spot. So Frank didn't make anyone feel safe. And I think that actually got the most out of his young players because they just had to play so hard. They had no choice. You know what I mean? They wanted to prove themselves. So he created a very good environment. I'm less optimistic about their future though. And it's, which is strange to say because of all the great signings they've had, but I think Kai Havertz is going to overdo it. And it's looking like that's pretty much going to get done. And here's my problem with that is, okay, you signed Werner, Ziyech, Havertz, and am I missing someone? That was the three main guys, right?
And basically they replaced their attack.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, well, Havertz and Ziyech kind of do the same thing. And, you know, the three young guys that really stepped up for you this year, Tammy, Mason, and Christian, are going to be on the outside looking in. Then you got to – I mean, William's probably on his way out, but then you got to factor in, like, what are you doing with Callum Hudson-Odoi? You know what I mean? And things like that. So it's like, are you going to stunt all these guys' progress by bringing in these guys who are week in, week out starters? Like that's the part
I really struggle with the Havertz signing. One, I think it's pretty glaring obvious that Zuma and that back line is just not getting it done. You got a little bit refresh when Rudiger came back, which is great, but you still see them conceding some goals. So the Havertz, he is really versatile, and I do understand that. You can play him maybe up as a forward. You can bring him down into that 10. You can maybe even play him at like a center mid spot, which he would accompany Conte, and obviously once he's healthy. But is that you got a lot of guys that already play that position, and you also have a big need to fix that defense. So I'm not sure if I quite understand where they're going with that.
I really don't understand the Havertz signing. I think they're going to spend what 80 million euros on a guy they don't need. Like you said, I mean he's a left-footed cam/right winger, which is exactly what Ziyech is. So like, what are you going to do? Play him on the left out of position? Then you're kind of running into a Griezmann situation in Barcelona. You're putting a left-footed guy who on the left side who's not an out-and-out winger. So like, I don't love that. You know, and maybe you play him at cam, but then, you know what I mean, you're still leaving someone out eventually. So, like, Mason and Christian are going to have to fight. Tammy Abraham's going to be pretty much out of the mix or a spot, you know, starter to relieve Timo. And that absolutely stunts the growth of these, you know, young, talented attackers that they have. And like you said, their defense is glaringly bad. Mm-hmm. You look at the top 10 teams on the table – no team has given up more goals than Chelsea. They gave up 54 goals this year. And the next closest team in the top 10 was Burnley at 50. So Burnley gave up less goals than you in an entire season. And they're on the pace of probably spending close to 200 million on three attackers. That was not your problem. So, you know, it's just – it doesn't really make sense. Like, Ziyech – I think Ziyech and Werner are fine. I think those are two really good pieces to add. You know, it's unfortunate Mason and Christian are going to have to kind of fight it out for their playing time, and even Tammy Abraham. But there would have been more opportunity for them, you know what I mean, to play on the left or the right, and for Abraham to, like, play maybe two strikers in some games. Yeah. Whatever, there was going to be more opportunities, but when you're bringing in Havertz, now it gets tough. And you're also completely ignoring, unless they have a lot more money to spend after Havertz, you're ignoring how bad your left back situation is. And I know they were looking at Chilwell, but like, how much money are you going to have left if you go get Havertz? And then your center back spot is awful. You know, what are you doing there? So I'm not very optimistic on Chelsea going forward. You know, if they sign Havertz, I think they need to reallocate those funds and take a serious look at their defense.
Can I make the case that I don't believe for signing all those guys?
Yeah.
Let me make the case that I don't believe. This is the case. We're going to be playing a lot of football next year. We're going to be playing a full Premier League, Champions League, FA Cup, Carabao Cup. We've seen a full season of Pulisic, Mount, whoever else is in this attack that you want to have in there, I guess Tammy. And it was good enough to be really close to making the Champions League. We're fighting for a Champions League spot all season. The case would be, let's play a lot of football this year. Let's save some of these guys for these other competitions, and then let's actually go for this. I think, you know, if that's the argument. It would be, you know, let's take a chance and get some new guys and see if we can really push this. Now, I would make the same argument that, well, we don't know the final form of some of these younger guys. That would be maybe if you're a fan, some of these younger guys that they do have would be the case. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm always – you know, it's tough, though, because there is a balance between playing time and growth where, you know, you want to get guys to get in a rhythm. And we can easily say, well, they'll just switch them out every game. You have Felicity in one game and Ziyech in the other game and Timo in one game and Tammy in the other game. But, like, Eli, like, we've played sports. Like, you need a rhythm. Like, you need – It's like in basketball. So we're more basketball players than soccer players. But when you go in for 8 minutes and you come out for 8 minutes and then you go, like, you don't get a rhythm that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's important, like, to have that. And I think playing games over and over is important. So that's the case for it. Now, just as far as Chelsea this year, I'd probably meet you guys in the middle and give Frank an 8, 8.5. They did, transfer ban. Coming off a transfer ban, it's impressive to make the Champions League. Don't care what league you're in. Unless you're one of the one or two big clubs in the league, it's really impressive. And they got some big-time performances from some guys who stepped up this year. Tammy Abraham, just want to point out our fantasy league for the Premier League. I drafted Tammy Abraham. Let me just pull up the final point. Okay, so I won first place with 1,800 points. The next closest was 1,650. That was our friend Robbie. Coop got third and Sean got fourth. So I just, let me just brag a little bit about how I ran away with the Premier League. And Tammy Abraham was a big reason why. He came up huge for me this year, scoring a lot of goals. I loved watching him play. Really, every game that he was out there was fun to watch because he's liable to put in the back of the net when he has the ball. So I'm probably a little more bullish on Frank's season than Sean is. I don't know. I think he did a really good job. And a lot of young guys, the back line is the issue. Eli's 100% correct on that. And, I laid out the case for why you would sign those guys, but that doesn't change the fact that you still need to do something about the back line. And if that's all the money you got and it's all going to them, then that case gets a lot weaker. And I think it's already kind of a weak case. But absolutely, I think they need to address that somehow. You know, I don't know who's out there. Maybe it's someone – I don't know who they could sign to shore it up, but – I think it definitely needs addressed if they do want to take that step that I'm talking about, going towards a Premier League title or maybe making a run in the Champions League. That's probably the first thing that's going to need addressed is the defending.
Yeah, I would say, and to kind of go with that, my fault, Kawhi, I mean, cut you off. To kind of go with that, I would say the rotation, like, to refer to Liverpool, they have guys that can rotate in. You've seen Oxlade-Chamberlain come in, and he was out there playing. Right wing, right mid, they got him there, and then they got some young guys that they can interchange. You saw Lovren was in at center back, and then you got Gomez who will come on, and kind of to keep them fresh. So a rotation makes sense if you sign Havertz, but it's pretty obvious that you are giving up goals. You have some guys that you can work with to make a push enough to get to the top four, but like you're not gonna. Be that championship team if you're giving up goals. And I just don't quite understand how Havertz helps that.
Yeah.
Right. And especially when you've already signed two high quality attackers. Christian Pulisic showed star potential down the stretch here. Mason Mount showed, and even if you want to like do the rotating thing, like why not just rotate Pulisic and Mount based on like who's playing better, you know what I mean? Where if you're running that 4-2-3-1, they both can play on the left side, or play on the left and the, Pulisic can play on the right, Mount on the left, however you want to do it. It just doesn't, it doesn't make sense to me that they're going like all out attack when that's not really their issue. And to go back to the stats, right? I said, they gave up more goals than anyone else in the top 10. Well, they scored more goals than anyone else in the top 10 not named Manchester City or Liverpool. So, like, why are you spending an exorbitant amount of money on your attack and not your defense? Like, the table says it all. They only finished with a plus 15 goal difference.
I got a question. How good is Hudson-Odoi? What is his potential level?
Oh, God, and I forgot about Hudson-Odoi.
We don't know.
What's his potential? Because that's what I'm saying. Because, like, when he comes on, I see a little spark in him. He looks good. How does he fit into that team if you bring in Havertz as well?
He doesn't get any playing time, essentially. Exactly. You probably have to send him out on loan to get any kind of playing time because I think he's too old to spend an entire season on the bench at this point because he's like 20 and 21. So that's an excellent point. Then what do you do with Hudson-Odoi? And even if you're running a 4-2-3-1, you got to remember you're taking out a center mid. So, like, Kovacic, Jorginho, or Conte is out of the mix, too. So, like, there's a lot of moving pieces in that midfield/attack that is getting bumped out if you bring in Havertz. I think that's overkill, especially when Ben Chilwell is out there and available and has said that he wants to go to – he will accept a move to Chelsea, you know, and left back is an issue for you. You know, so, I don't know. It just blows my mind, and the center back spot is a glaring need. I think they need. I think that's the biggest thing they need to address right now.
Well, let's continue this then, Sean, and we'll just add a caveat then, because the next thing we were going to get to is, United and Chelsea are both going to make the Champions League next year. I think we'd all agree that Liverpool and Man City probably are, you know, the two teams we would expect to have better runs than United and Chelsea in the Champions League next year. But out of those two teams, How do you see them? You know, who has a better chance to make a run? And we're just going to continue that conversation we were having, Sean.
In the Champions?
Yeah.
Go Blues. No, but seriously, I'm leaning towards United. I would say they got depth. They got guys that are, it looks like, on the brink of their prime. And Rashford, Martial, they can score goals. They can do well enough on defending end, young guys to rotate in, keep people fresh. I just think they're more equipped to perform in a Champions League format for actually making a push to win it. Chelsea look a little bit less likely to do that. They look a little bit immature, I would say. So I'm leaning towards United.
You agree, Coop?
Well, this is heavily predicated on what United does in the offseason, right, or in the transfer window.
Sure.
Because, you know, obviously they're flirting with Sancho and Koeman, but it has to actually get done. You know, I mean, one of those two deals has to get done. And then they also have to address their back line still. In my opinion, it's certainly better than Chelsea's, but it can get better for sure. I think they need a little more midfield depth, too, and – maybe, well, I mean, if you bring in Sancho or Koeman, I think their attacking depth is fine, especially since they're keeping Ighalo for another season. So I'm going to say United, assuming that Sancho or Koeman is coming. I believe one of the two is coming this summer for sure. Yeah. So assuming one of those two comes in, I think United has equal quality depth because you think, you know, you can rotate Ighalo, Daniel James and Mason Greenwood into games with, a Rashford, Martial, Sancho/Koeman, you know, front three. So you have multiple guys that you can plug and play. Like I said, you need a little more midfield depth. I think their midfield drops off significantly when, you know, Pogba is out or if Bruno's out for any period of time. I think that would be very damaging for them. So they could probably address that. And then I think you got to do something about Lindelof as well. But, you know, I just don't see how Chelsea can have Champions League success without addressing their back line. And that doesn't seem to be a priority for them. They're going to have all the depth in the world in their attack. But that really doesn't matter if you're giving up, you know, a lot, if you're giving up a lot of goals. You know, especially when the competition level is higher and everybody's attack is better. So You know, and I think we saw that in the Liverpool game, right? They scored three but gave up five. You can't win games like that. So I think United would be better equipped to compete in Champions League next year than Chelsea would at this point.
I would agree. I probably don't even need the caveat of if Sancho or Koeman come. I think that just the roster they have now is equipped to at least compete. And especially if Greenwood takes a step or if Rashford takes a step forward, which I mean, Greenwood's 18 years old. So I feel like
that makes you excited, don't it?
That makes me a little giddy. Yeah. So I will say, that I would pick United. Eli kind of ran down everything wrong with Chelsea and how they're addressing other things and not that. So that's an issue when you have issues and you don't address those issues. That creates a problem, right? And I think Man United's probably their biggest issue. You know, maybe you say, oh, well, Martial's not the number nine of the future. Maybe he's not. But I think he's good enough right now. Left back, probably Luke Shaw doesn't look like he's going to be – you know, he's not the left back you want on a Champions League winning squad. I don't think Brendan Williams is either. However, I do think that he has a lot of promise. Played well today, certainly. Matic as a defensive center mid gets a lot of shit. I'm still on his bandwagon. I'm still a fan. I think he does a lot of good stuff sometimes defensively, kind of sitting back. He's not going to score goals. He will give you a really good switch every once in a while going forward. And sometimes that's all you need from a defensive midfielder. And defensively, he still does pretty well. And he can control the ball when he has it pretty good. So I'm a little higher on him. I think probably left back is the biggest area of need. And if we have Pogba and Bruno Fernandes playing those two eights, it's going to be hard to beat us. And, let me just go out on a limb right now.
Oh, here we go. Oh, God. Here it comes.
Manchester United. Record this. Producer, record this. Manchester, let me look in the camera directly. Let me look directly at the paper.
Hey, yeah. Manchester
United will win the Champions League in 2020 and 2021 season. That is a guarantee. Win the Champions League. And if it's not true, I will let Coop decide something later that I'll argue. But they will win the Champions League.
I have the perfect punishment.
I shouldn't have said that. They're well equipped. They've got goal scoring. They've got the defenders. They just, I think they can do it. I'm not sure who can keep up with them. They're my pick for next year. So let's move on from that then.
Scorching hot take.
So let's do this then. They announced that Jordan Henderson would be the PFA Premier League Player of the Year. Do you agree with that pick, Sean? Who would be your guy if not Jordan Henderson?
Premier League Player of the Year. I mean, it's a tough case to argue really anybody else with how well Liverpool have ran away with this season. And going back to our conversation about if they'll hit that 100, I remember me saying something about, I don't know if they'll necessarily do that, if they'll be full gung-ho on that, because they were out of the champions. So I figured that they would, and it ended up not being so wild. I think they were beer drunk, but Jordan Henderson, let me read some
beer drunk.
Wait, I think so, man.
They did not break the record for most points in the Premier League season, correct?
That is correct. 99, I think, is all they got.
And the record still belongs to Manchester United, correct?
Oh,
okay. Glory, glory, Man United. Okay, I'm sorry.
So
it's a good dinner for me, guys.
Jordan Henderson. I mean, tackle success is 65%. That's really well. 63 tackles on the year, 183 recoveries, 116 duels won, and 90 loss. And he has 17 for successful 50-50s. So stats that are not wowing you from the center mid spot as a Kevin De Bruyne. And I know we saw the clinic that he put on today. Dude is simply fantastic. But you just see how Jordan Henderson approaches the game and how he impacts that team. And he's definitely the leader. I would say he definitely deserves to wear that captain band. And mm-hmm. I would say it's pretty hard to argue anybody else when they're lifting that trophy up. And if you think about the most important person that did that this year, I think you can give it to Jordan Henderson. Aside from obviously the amazing play we see from Trent Alexander-Arnold being one of probably the best assist guys, especially for being a back who gets up that right side more often than not, along accompanied with his defending. He's also good on the defending end too, but kind of the glue that keeps them guys together and keeps them at that high level, I think a lot of it can be attributed to Jordan Henderson. Now, last year, I think we saw how impactful Van Dijk was in that kind of that leadership role and how he raised their level of play. I think this year, I think it might have been leaned a little bit more on Jordan Henderson. So, I mean, I like the pick. Like I said, it's hard to really argue someone else. If I had to maybe go with someone else, I guess you could – I'd have to say Kevin De Bruyne. I say he's superb. Kevin De Bruyne would probably be my runner up in that situation, especially for success. They finished second in the table. They score goals. I mean, that's what City really does. But
yeah,
I would say I like the Jordan Henderson pick. If I had to follow up, KDB. That's my pick.
It's tough. I mean, they had such a good season that it's hard not to pick someone from their team. And I think you could have made arguments for Alexander-Arnold. You could have made an argument for Virgil van Dijk, and you probably could have made one for Sadio Mane. But really, I think, you know, and we used to do this, right, in high school. It was – so this is different. But whatever, all conference team, right, or all newspaper team. You know, a lot of the time we would go to everybody on our team and everyone would vote, and then the person that everyone voted for we'd send to the thing and they'd be the guy on the team. So I think if you went to Liverpool squad and you gave everybody a vote and you said, who's the most important player? One of you guys is getting Premier League Player of the Year because you guys were so dominant. Everybody vote. Who do you think was the most important guy? I think Jordan Henderson probably would win that vote. I think that means something. You know, I think that matters. So I probably would stick with Henderson. It's tough to go against him. I guess Alexander-Arnold had a great year. He deserves some recognition. Yeah. Who would you take, Coop?
Well, honestly, I would have took Alexander-Arnold over Jordan Henderson. That's just me personally. But if I were picking for this, I would have gave it to KDB. And here's why. And I get it. Like, Liverpool was super dominant this year. But City has won the Premier League, like, four of the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. And in those 4 years that they won it, they never had a player win Player of the Year. You go back to last year they won it. Virgil van Dijk got Player of the Year. They won it the year before that. They gave it to Mohamed Salah. Now, Salah and van Dijk, hard to argue, right? They were both super impactful. Salah 2 years ago had that incredible season, you know, where he was like, you know, I think he almost had 50 goals in all competitions, something like that. But, you know, Raheem Sterling is the one who kind of brought this point up in an article I was reading earlier, is that Liverpool has won now 3 straight Player of the Year awards and has only won the Premier League once in those 3 seasons. So it's, to me, it's like, okay, you know, if we're not always giving it to like best player on the best team or most impactful on the best team, why are we giving it to Jordan Henderson? You know, because he didn't wow you know what I mean, in any way. And I know, like, what he does doesn't show up on the stat sheets, and I get that. And maybe you can't go with Van Dijk, you know, because voter fatigue, stuff like that. But, like, De Bruyne just tied the record for Premier League assist in a season, and, you know, which was a record that was previously the most all-time in any of Europe's top 5 leagues until Messi one-upped Thierry Henry a few games ago. So, you know, and then he also had 13 goals, and City was still the highest scoring team in the Premier League, 102 goals as a team, which is clearly, you know, his doing. So I think you can point to De Bruyne and say, you know, he was a little bit more directly impactful to Manchester City's success, even though, you know, FIFA also had a lot of play in that and overruling the the Champions League ban, but you know, they still
garbage.
they still finished top two in the table. And you know, the guy ties the all-time assist record. I think there's something that should have been awarded there. You know, as even, and given that Liverpool was so dominant, you really can't point to one person for that reason. You can point to Kevin De Bruyne and said, yo, like, he kind of put City on their back this year because that defense was horrible. They had to put a lot of goals in, you know, and he did it, you know what I mean? And the way he controls that Man City, you know, attack is second to none from anyone in the midfield. So, you know, when you look at it that way, I would have went with KDB. I would have went Trent as my runner up. And I would have put Bruno at third. I don't care if that he only played 14 games. He would have
gotten third. I love that answer. Coop, let me ask something. One word answer, Coop. Should Steph Curry have won the 2015 MVP averaging 23 points a game?
Yes. Here's why. Okay. I'm sorry. You said one word. You did say one word. I'm sorry.
No, you can say why if you want. You can say why.
Just quick.
Tell me why it's different.
Because Steph Curry sat out like 18 fourth quarters and only played like 33 minutes a game. So like his numbers in that season are a lot less than, like, you know what I mean, if you go to normal MVP's minutes, which is like 38, you know what I mean, minutes a game, his numbers then go up. That's the reason why Steph is still the MVP in that case.
Okay. Good argument.
Steph is the best point guard in the NBA.
This is a soccer pod. Let's get back to
relax. I just want to put my current cape on every now and again.
Because I don't get to talk about stuff enough. I already say in the group message, it's a lot of the same old kind of arguments. Steph can't do that. Steph is the greatest. How about that?
Get the group message. Okay. Can we talk about this financial fair play thing, though?
I don't think we've talked about that. I was going to ask you about that. What is RSA, and this might be me just not knowing, RSA, if you're listening and you do know, somebody answer me, why would you be punished if you did nothing wrong? Why would I have to pay you if I did nothing wrong? And if it comes in like legal fees and things like that, please let me know. I'm just not sure how that works. Because if didn't do anything, why are you being punished?
Mourinho's argument was, Mourinho's like, I'm not saying they did it. But if they didn't do it, why are they being fined at all, right? It's like when people, like, get, you know, suspended or whatever for steroids or something in the NFL, and then they appeal it, and then now it's down to two games. Well, like, they still did the steroids, right? Like, we all admit that the steroids happened because they got suspended for two games. But, like, if they reviewed it and they said there was no steroids, but they wouldn't be suspended. So why is it that they reviewed it, said there's no financial misplay, which there clearly was. I don't really think you can make an argument that there wasn't. Why is there still a fine here but no Champions League ban? I think it's – personally, you know, and whatever. Like, I'm a United fan, so I hate City. But guess what? Like, when PSG gets suspended for the same thing in a year from now, which they probably will, I'm going to say – PSG should be banned from the Champions League because it's just not fair. And this is what happens. This is what UEFA wants, though. They want these big clubs to be able to do whatever they want. And, you know, hey, whatever. We can do the moral thing about the guys in the Middle East and how they're making all this oil money and some of the wars on humanity that are going on over there. We could talk about all that stuff. And people are talking about all that stuff when you talk about PSG ownership and Man City ownership. But keep it out of football. Keep that money out of football. And I think that's the big argument here for teams who are saying City should be banned. That's the argument. Keep that stuff out of football. What the UEFA is saying by not keeping them out of the Champions League is it's your money, do what you want. And I think that's, you know, that's really a deeper moral question that people can have, but to me, I think it's disgraceful.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And like you said, it completely – you might as well just get rid of financial fair play at this point. Because to your point, if this does happen to PSG, how can you uphold it now? You know what I mean? Like, how can you – if I'm PSG, I'm going back and saying – because this is something that happens in court cases all the time. You reference a similar case, you know what I mean, from the past, right, because it's precedent. how that's all PSG will have to do in order to avoid any kind of Champions League ban. You know, and I can even see if maybe you thought 2 years was harsh, because that's usually what happens, right? When you appeal something, you know, maybe 2 years is harsh. I don't think it's harsh. But, okay, we'll knock it down to one. You pay, you know, a fine, and we move on. But like you said, you can't acknowledge there was enough wrongdoing for us to fine you, and then but there is not enough wrongdoing to – you know, to play you in, to ban you. Right. So it's just like, you know, where is the consistency here? And Mourinho hit it on the nose. He said, either you did it and you need to be banned, or you didn't do it and you shouldn't be fined or banned. And then if you did do it and we're not going to ban you, then throw financial fair play out of the window completely. You have to now remove the ban from one of the list of punishments. And right. Just kind of call it, you know, now it's only a fine if you break the rules, which I think any big club would pay. You know what I mean? So it's just,
but if
like,
it's a fine, and they're just going to pay it with the same ways they're paying these players.
Exactly.
That's what got me. That's what got me thinking about it, because like when I originally heard the news, I was like, oh, this is, I was saying, and I'm not a City fan, so I don't really care one way or not. So I was like, oh, they get to play some football. And then I kind of read the interview that Mourinho did, and it makes perfect sense. Like, if you did do it, you should be punished. If you didn't, you shouldn't be. But
right.
If we're not punishing you for something that you did do in any other way besides a fine, we have tons of money. The point is, we are using money to do this illegal act. So, like, what I did understand is what Mourinho was saying, which is why I was trying to have that conversation, because if you didn't do it, I just don't understand why that fine was assessed to City. And I mean, they paid it, and the money that we used to pay it might have been that same money. So like, I don't know. I already said that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. So whatever. I'm all riled up. I'm sweating, man. So we talked about player of the year. Let's do manager of the year. This has not been announced yet. So can I start with this one, manager of the year? My pick is – it's actually Jurgen Klopp. Write this one down when you guys say that I'm always biased. This is my time I'm not biased. I'm picking Jurgen Klopp here. It's tough not to. The season that they had, had a chance of breaking the points record. One of the best seasons we've ever seen in the Premier League. And to do it with, you know, the squad who it took so long to get over the hump with Liverpool, who, you know, they've been searching so long for this title. I just think it was a great story for them. And, hats off to Liverpool. As a United fan, hats off. And I think Klopp has to be the manager of the year, at least for me.
Agreed. Good. I don't think you can really give it to anyone else. I certainly would go with Klopp. I would say that I think I would have Frank in second, and I'd have Ole in third.
Yeah.
I think because those two were so heavily scrutinized coming into the season and mm-hmm. both finished top four, I think there's something to be said about both of those managers.
Yeah, and Ole would probably be second for me. I want to pick him, but it's tough too. Brendan Rodgers had a good case, like I said before.
Yeah.
Before they fell off, but yeah. What do you think, Sean?
Can I give you a hot take? My hot take.
Go ahead.
For who I would like to see win that is I got two. I got two hot takes actually.
Okay.
Arteta for the Gunners. And then I also got Nuno, and I might pronounce this wrong, Espirito with the Wolves.
Oh, brother.
The Wolves manager has a better case. You can't – hold on. You can't.
Not really. They finished seventh.
Well, and I get it. But, like, that's still better than what you might have expected from Wolves, maybe. But Arteta, He didn't even.
It's not better than they did last year. They were seventh last year. It's not like.
Well, I like true. But like the art. Hold on. Let's just address Arteta.
I like his style.
You want to edit this out, Sean?
Yeah. Cut this one out. Cut this one out.
No. Okay. No, it's staying. It's staying now. It's staying.
Hey, yo, I don't pick the Gunners for anything, man. I like Arteta. I like him. I like his style.
And don't get me wrong, yeah. I like him too. But sure. Did he coach 20 games this year? I don't know that he did. No. So how in the world? And in those 20 games, they weren't like spectacular because they didn't move up into the top seven.
They were no better. Yeah. Than they were.
No way you can give this to Arteta. You're out of your mind. I'm sorry.
That was an extremely cold take, not a hot take, Sean.
Oh, sorry. All right, then I'm going to just go with the Wolves. Nuno Espirito. That's what I'm going to get.
Another cold take. Okay.
We can cut that out and just go with Nuno. Thanks.
Oh, no. We're definitely
– please, God. No, the people need to hear this.
I didn't do nothing on the managers. They didn't do nothing.
I mean, Nuno's got a – that's kind of an interesting pick, too. I think the Burnley boss and the Sheffield boss have better cases.
Yeah, I agree.
And Wolves, but okay. So Sean is throwing away his pick for manager of the year. Let's do, and this is the last thing. We'll kind of just look ahead to next year. Now, Premier League is over for the 2019-2020 season. So looking ahead to 2020-2021, let's get a champion pick, and we'll just do top four. Sean, you can kick it off.
Champion pick. I'm going to alley-oop with Eli. Give me a quick second.
Okay. Eli?
I'm going to go with City. I think Liverpool obviously had this incredible run. It's tough to go back-to-back. I think City's going to address their back line. Actually, their back line really wasn't as awful when I look at the numbers, but it felt like it.
Yeah.
But I think now that they're not going to be banned, I think this was a humbling season for them. So I think Pep will get these guys in order. Laporte's going to be fully healthy, so that's going to help with some of the early season woes that they had. And then, you know, I heard Ake is a possible signing for them to give them some center-back depth, so that'll certainly help where they need it the most. So I'm going to go ahead and say City get back on top next year. And I think it would be after how dominant Liverpool was this year. I think there's going to be a little bit of a championship hangover, which we already saw like towards the end of the year. But I think it's going to carry into next season as well, because they're not really the deepest team, in my opinion, even with how great their starting 11 is. So, you know, and I think Pep's just too good of a manager for them to be down for more than 1 year.
Okay. So we'll all do our champion pick and then do top four then. So let me do my champion pick. We'll give Sean more time here. So here's the thing about Liverpool, and I touched on this on a pod earlier that we did with Dan. They're owned by Fenway Sports Group. Fenway Sports Group takes the foot off the gas after they win. Look at the Red Sox in 2018 and what they've done since then. I think that I would not be surprised at all to see one of these big guys for Liverpool not be there next year. And who knows? Who knows what that means? And as a United fan, I'm never going to pick them to win two in a row. Mane to Madrid or Salah is actually – those are legitimate possibilities. I think both of those guys want to play in Spain.
You wish.
No, I mean, I think that's legit. I mean, I don't know what it is. Guys from Africa, they like playing in Spain. South America, too, same thing. Those guys, they just kind of view Spain as a different league. That maybe it's a new challenge even. So I'm going to take Liverpool to fall off. And City, you know, they'd be the next pick probably. But, you know, they've got questions, you know, with age, guys leaving. Sané's not going to be there. Obviously, he wasn't there this year either. But, you know, Fernandinho's getting up there. Aguero's getting up there. David Silva's getting up there. Bernardo getting up there. They've got some questions there. I'm going to go with Manchester United to win the Premier League.
Oh, my God.
That could not be more
predictable. I knew it was coming.
Listen.
I was saying, he didn't pick anybody. I knew it was coming.
Come on. This is a legitimate case, though. This is a legitimate case. Greenwood is going to take next step up, okay? Golden boot next year. Guaranteed.
Oh, my God.
Who else is going to win it? Who else is going to win the Golden Boot? I'm taking him to win it, okay? Fernandez. Eli said it. He had a case to win player of the year this year, barely didn't even play half the season. okay? Pogba, full season of health, okay? Maguire, you're adding somebody in the back line to play with him, maybe a left back. Wan Bissaka, already one of the best defending fullbacks in the world, takes a step off offensively. And Rashford, you know, people look at Rashford like he's a mature product. He's still really young, too. So if he takes a step, and, you know, when you combine that with, I think, Liverpool and City maybe taking a step back, I got United, guys.
But I think Rashford's much more likely to win the Golden Boot if you're going to pick anyone from your team.
I don't know. But I think Greenwood's better in front of goal. I really do.
I think Rashford creates more chances and will play more than Greenwood.
Yeah. We'll finish.
All right, let me go because I know who I'm picking.
Okay.
And this Wolves. This pick, oh, man. Come on, you're going to kill me for that Wolves pick. I am going with Manchester United. That's what I'm going with. Mike, so I'm on board with you. I'm on board with you. And the reason is
– talk to him. I take back what I said. You're the smartest guy on the spot.
The reason is, if you look at their team, they got a lot going for them. You have Bruno, who you said with not playing a full year, you would vote into
you said that, Coop.
Of the year. You accompany that with these guys that are reaching their primes or are going to develop into their primes. You get a little bit of help on that back line. They have, on the year, 18 wins, 12 draws. City and Liverpool both have 3. If they can freshen up that back line to where they can stop giving up as many goals, they'll start putting more goals in the net, keeping possession. I think they have a real shot that turns that 18-12 closer to maybe more 24, high end of it, 25 wins. I'm going with United.
Listen, I'm on the United future train as well, just not next season. Like 20, I think like 2022. Okay, we can talk 2023. I would probably pick them. I would pick United to win in 2023. Yeah. 2022, I think they finished top 2. I think next year they finished top 4. Obviously, we'll get to that. But I think it's a little early to call them championship caliber. That's all.
I disagree.
Yeah. But even just saying this, two of us picking him and you saying you're holding a lot of United future stocks, that's a really big turnaround from where they were when, you know, even when Mourinho left.
Well, in November.
Or in November, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's debatable that Greenwood is better in front of goal. I don't think that's debatable.
I don't think it's debatable either.
Yeah.
Greenwood's obviously better.
Yeah, Golden Boot next year.
And, he will win multiple Golden Boots in his career, but I don't think he'll win it next year. I think Rashford is just going to have many more opportunities than Greenwood will. Because I don't think Greenwood's going to start unless he takes Martial's spot. So I just – and that would probably happen somewhere towards the middle of the season. I just don't
– All right, I'm gonna put my United cape on for a quick second. Look at what they did this year, bro. Complete 180. I got the United down. I got
the United. I love that pick. Sean, love it.
I think they're built, bro.
All right, so you think it's a joke that they can win the Champions League, but they can win the Premier League, the best league in the world?
I think you're only accompanying that with the competition in the Prem. Just because the best competition is in the Prem doesn't mean that they're going to force other teams from other countries to play their style of play.
And the Prem really wins the Champions League probably the least of all the big five clubs.
True. Well, they've got such a tough road.
Yeah.
All right, so Lynn, let's do our top 4 picks then. I can start. So I had United at 1, Liverpool 2, City 3. So I think those 3 are probably the locks on, I would think, all of our top 4s. So that 4th team for me, and United maybe is not a lock. That's probably a stretch to say they're a lock. That's definitely a stretch to say they're a lock. They barely finished it this year. So I would say my 4th team, I think it's Tottenham. I think they come back full year under Mourinho. I like it. I like them a lot. They're probably going to spend some money. You know, he always is begging them to spend money, and they probably will do something. Down year for a lot of their players. I think maybe they just need some time to adjust to his system. And I don't know. I just don't trust Chelsea to remake what they did this year. and especially with the defense that we talked about, if they don't improve that, it's tough to maintain that with the busy schedule they're going to have next year.
I don't like that very much, Mike, because you kind of stealing my picks right out of it. I was going to put the Spurs in that fourth spot. I think the Blues fall out of that.
This is my guy.
So I was going to go with the Spurs. I hate that you picked that first, but United won. I'm a 10 toes down on that one. United won, City 2, Liverpool 3. And then you got the Spurs hopping in there at 4. All right, so I do think that the Spurs need to get accustomed to Mourinho and how he plays. And all right, so hopefully the Spurs don't always open up that pocketbook. So I would say if he can get a little bit of that out of him, I think they got a pretty good chance of getting to that top four. So the Spurs is who I'm going with that fourth spot.
Yep.
I don't like Tottenham in the top four. And I don't believe in Mourinho. That's the main reason. Just flat out. And I think Harry Kane should be looking for any way out of Tottenham, to be honest. I think he's too good of a striker to, you know, play for a team that's never winning any kind of title.
Yeah.
So that's just me personally. If I was him, I'd be looking for any way to get myself to United.
Yeah, with that being said, he's been playing for a team who's not going to win a title for a while.
Yeah, I know. So if I was him, I'd be looking for a way out. But I think top four remains how it is, except City and Liverpool flip. I think Chelsea so far has had the best summer signings just from looking at their – like they're going to score enough goals to outlast Tottenham, Wolves – Leicester, and Arsenal's abysmal. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't have any faith in Tottenham opening up their checkbooks to really improve that team, no matter how much Mourinho complains, because they didn't do it for Pochettino, and he was complaining the entire time too. So I think it'd be hypocritical for them to do that. And I don't think it's their way. So, and unless they prove me wrong,
yeah,
you know, and I don't see how they get up into the top four over Chelsea, who, even with some needs still being there, like they might possibly be one of the highest scoring teams in the league next year with the guys that they've brought in. So,
but Chelsea's only up one on goal difference.
Yeah, well, but you also have to factor in they're bringing in Timo Werner and Ziyech and possibly Havertz with, and they scored 8 more goals than Tottenham. So, like, I think they're probably going to go up to, like, they're probably going to score 80 to 90 goals next year. You know, I would say.
That's a lot of goals. That's a lot of goals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's where Liverpool was at this year, was at 85. Like, I don't see why.
That's a lot.
A team led, I don't see why a team led by Timo, who can give you 15 to 20.
Yeah.
So you can get.
How many you think Timo will grab next year?
He's got about anywhere from 15 to 20 at least. You know, Ziyech can give you double-digit goals. Havertz can give you double-digit goals. And then you factor in, you know, maybe you get 5 from Mount, Pulisic, maybe 7 or 8 from Abraham. Like, they just have so many guys that can put the ball in the back of the net. I mean, that's going to be enough to keep them in the top four, even if they don't play any type of defense whatsoever.
For my Blues fans, I do want y'all to make it, but I got to not be biased all the time. Mike, and I want you to stop saying I'm biased.
I don't think I've ever said that.
We haven't talked about Juve yet, so you haven't been.
Let's do it. Last thing. This is the last thing we're talking about today. Juventus today, on July 26th, clinched their – is it 9 straight?
Their ninth
straight Serie A amateur title. What are your thoughts? Serie A amateur. That's what I'm calling it now.
Ew, come on, man. Shout out to my man Ronaldo putting the team on his back. Unfortunately, Dybala was a little banged up in this one, which is not great. But like I say, I'm hoping to hear some news that it's not that bad.
And he's
still playing the champion. So like I say, but
you really don't deserve to give Ronaldo any credit, but whatever.
9.
Hey, don't you hate on Ronaldo all the time?
He does. All the time. He did it today. This guy.
He's showing the Ronaldo jersey.
That's nice. No, I don't hate on Ronaldo. I already say Ronaldo is so good that I feel like at times it's all about Ronaldo. Immobile had a hat trick today. And Ronaldo was out here gunning for goals. And I mean, we got the win, so I'm not mad. I would say it's not that he always does that. It's that he only does it sometimes. Yeah. And other than that, he's scoring pins. I already said, I think he had 13 pins on the year.
Out of 31.
That's what I'm saying. He is so good, he can give you that. But what I'm saying is a lot of that is accompanied by goals. And I feel at times we play a game of his instead of a team game. And don't get me wrong, our midfield is busted. And it's just not being fixed. But Bentancur is very promising. Ramsey's got to go. I don't know if I really love my Tweety. I guess we can keep him. But I think there's a lot of people that Juventus have on that trading block. And I hear it's at least 11. So I'm thinking that they're full gutted. DeCilio, Douglas Costa, Matuidi, Higuain, a whole bunch of names on there. I think we should keep Rabiot, though, just because he looks good. I already say every game that he plays, he looks better and better. And he's starting to find his footing. But I already say the one game, Eli, a couple games ago, Ronaldo was putting the pressure on. He was getting shots up. They weren't bad shots either. And I was like, he's going to get on the board. And he scored two. And I like that. I like when he's aggressive. Yeah. And him and Dybala are finding each other. And it's great. We just got to really fix that midfield.
Well, here's the good thing. You know, as long as they have Ronaldo, they could probably trot the three of us out there in the midfield and win that league. So I think you're going to be okay, Sean. Sorry, I always bash on Syria.
He's a hater.
And see, well, and to go back to – Juventus, I don't think them trying to conform to Ronaldo's play style was a problem. I think Sarri just needed to put Dybala out there with him so that they could figure it out. You know, obviously, like, they had to mesh together because they didn't get a ton of time to do it last year under Allegri. And then coming into this year, they didn't give them a ton of time to gel. So, like, where was the chemistry going to come from? And as soon as the chemistry developed, Juventus was an elite team and kind of ran away with it towards the end. Not kind of, they ran away with it towards the end. And it's just like, and it's something that, you know, Sean, because he's a Dybala fan, but like even myself, I was saying, why are these two not playing together? Like they can just play off of each other eventually, and they're going to eventually figure that out. I think Sarri just made it so much more difficult than what it actually needed to be. And he was just, and then eventually he was just like, you know what, like, both of you go out there and figure it out. And guess what? They did, because they're professionals. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, you know what I mean? And Dybala ended up having a very strong second half. I think he finished with like 11 league goals. He probably could have gave you 15 to 20 had you given him regular starting minutes from day one. So hopefully that's a lesson. If Sarri stays, there's been some doubts about him, but like, hopefully that's a lesson for him going into next year. These two need to play game in, game out, period.
Agreed. And I would say, if we could find somebody, rumored Raul Jimenez, if we could find somebody at that nine that can play that hold up, I would say, I think that could be beneficial to Dybala, because you can move him back down into that 10 spot, which I think he is best at. I already say, don't get me wrong, he's good at that forward spot, but I think we could find it a little bit better if he's at that 10.
I wouldn't mess with it. I would not bring anyone in there to mess with it. Let Dybala play as that, you know, false nine kind of thing. That way Ronaldo can roam from out wide in and cut in and let them work up front, man. Don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I'm all for yeah. He, no, him, them two, their connection that they're finding is just, it's fantastic. Yeah. That's why we got Nine Street, Mike.
Hey, good for you guys. And you know what? I hope that they figure out exactly how to click perfectly for the Champions League here, because I've got a future bet on them to win the Champions League that'll pay me a small fortune depending on what country you're living in. So I hope that they can figure it out. So, Sean. We really appreciate you coming on, man. It's been a lot of fun talking football with you, man.
Thanks, dude. Thanks for having me.
Yep. What we got going on with the All In Network, Coop?
Well, we've got a lot going on, Mike.
We do. Yes.
Episode 2 of All In Politics just dropped. They have Keith Arthur Bolden who is an actor and professor who came on to break down Hamilton, which just recently came to Disney Plus. I saw it for the first time a couple of days ago. Best musical I've ever seen. And I don't really even like musicals. So honestly, that's saying a lot. So, you know, they get a professional to come on there and break it down and talk about it. Very interesting episode. Episode 9 of Reign and Bliss is more than entertaining, which also came out on Friday. So make sure you guys go check that out after you are done here. We have for the network, the my article for the NBA redrafts. I'm going to have a new one coming out here this week, probably on Wednesday, with I think the 2012 class is the one that I'm on now. So I'll be having that out for you guys this week. And if you're tuning in on YouTube, make sure you like, subscribe, leave a comment. You know, that way it kind of helps us reach, you know, broader people, you know, through the YouTube search tools. And if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you download the audio as well, either on Spotify, Apple, those count as plays for us. So, you know, all that stuff counts and matters. So thank you guys again. Continue to share if you like the podcast. Let other people know about it. Help us reach a bigger audience. And thank you guys for being, you know, such a great fan base so far.
Real quick. The All In with Reign and Bliss, y'all need to start telling them to stop wearing that Kardashian cape. Just saying.
Listen, man, we don't like to restrict the content, except unless it's right wing propaganda. So anything else you want to spew on our network, you can do.
Yeah. You know, obviously check out them. Subscribe to the network so you can see all of our shows. All In Podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening to your podcast. Check out Teespring.com/all-in-network to get All In merch. Eli's rocking the All In Network t-shirt. Make sure you're grabbing that stuff. He's also got the phone case. We've got blankets, hoodies. So if you like hanging out with us and listening to these podcasts, grab some merchandise and support. So, all right, that's all we got, guys. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast.
See you guys.
Peace. You know, man.